Blog Talk Radio.
I am the nation. I was born on July 4th, 1776, and the Declaration of Independence is my birth certificate. The bloodlines of the world run in my veins because I offered freedom to the oppressed. I am many things and many people. I am the nation. I am 200 million living souls and the ghost of millions who have lived and died for me. I am Nathan Hale and Paul Revere. I stood at Lexington and fired the shot heard round the world. I'm Washington, Jefferson, Patrick Henry. I'm John Paul Jones, the Green Mountain Boys, and Davy Crockett. I'm Lee and Abe Lincoln. I remember the Alamo, the Maine, and Pearl Harbor. When freedom called, I answered and stayed until it was over there. I left my heroic dead in Flanders fields and in the steaming jungles of Vietnam. I am the Brooklyn Bridge, the wheatlands of Kansas, and the granite hills of Vermont. I am the coal fields of the Virginias and Pennsylvania, the fertile lands of the West, the Golden Gate and Grand Canyon. I sprawl from the Atlantic to the Pacific. 3 million square miles. I'm more than 3 million farms. I'm forest, field, mountain, and desert. I'm quiet villages, and I'm cities that never sleep. You can look at me and see Ben Franklin walking down the streets of Philadelphia. I'm Babe Ruth in the World Series. I'm 130,000 schools and colleges and 326,000 churches where my people worship God as they please. I'm a ballot dropped in a box. I am an editorial in a newspaper. And I'm a letter to a congressman. I'm Thomas Edison, Albert Einstein. I'm Horace Greeley, Will Rogers, and the Wright brothers. I'm George Washington Carver, Daniel Webster, and Jonas Salk. I'm Walt Whitman, Thomas Paine, Tom Sawyer, and Walt Disney. Yes, I am the nation, and these are the things that I am. I was conceived in freedom, and God willing, in freedom I'll spend the rest of my days. May I possess always the integrity, the courage, and the strength to keep myself unshackled, to remain a citadel of freedom and a beacon of hope to the entire world. I am the nation.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Patriot Education. My name is Terry Rowland. I'm your hostess for this evening. And as always, we are brought to you through the good offices of www.patriotfamilies.com, a collection of Americans who believe in the ideals and ideology and goals set forth by our founding fathers. We believe that we truly are the nation, with all of the benefits of that state and all of the responsibilities that go along with it. Our topic tonight on Patriot Education is, should educators be the babysitters for the nanny state? The answer appears to be yes. Our current administration and the philosophy which it follows seems to be that dependence and eternal childhood are the end-all be-all of what it means to be an American. The idea that one takes responsibility for one's own actions, that one is aware that choices lead to consequences, and that making choices is the essence of freedom, and that freedom has the price of unintended consequences or negative consequences when we make a bad choice. These ideas apparently are no longer a part of what our educational system offers in addition to academic teaching. Case in point, I'd like to tell you about my experience today in teaching a Spanish 1 class to 8th graders, which would, should they pass it, give them advanced high school credits toward graduation. The class was given a worksheet to do that was to be a quiz, graded as a quiz, done independently, And it covered material that the class has been working on for the last 2 weeks. I had to go a little into more explanation here, as our eighth graders in my school have their elective courses, one of which is this Spanish course for credit, every other day. And they are scheduled to have it on either every odd day or every even day. And when they are not taking the Spanish course, they're in physical education classes. So in 2 weeks, they get approximately 5 to 6 90-minute lessons. So this class had roughly 6 to 7 hours of work on the material upon which they were being quizzed. When I announced to the class that it was a quiz, you would have thought that I had told them all they were sentenced to the Roman galleys and they were to immediately take their rowing benches. Cries of, "It's not fair! We didn't know we were having a quiz, but I don't know this stuff!" abounded. My response was, "I'm sorry, but we have to find out what you know. We need to find out, are you learning the material in this course? Particularly since we are in search of a replacement Spanish teacher who will need to be able to come in and see how many of the students have absorbed the material thus far and what material they have been taught." Even after being told it was a quiz to see what they had remembered and what they had learned, at least half of the 20-some students raised their hands several times saying, "I don't know what this word means. Can you help me with it?" And my response was, "No, I cannot help you. This is a quiz. I need to find out what you know, not whether or not you can ask me the answers." I was, obviously, in the minds of a great many of these students, the most evil, wicked, horrible, unkind, unfair teacher they had ever seen in their lives. This attitude and this thinking pattern is the result of babysitting through 7 previous years of school. The idea that being tested on one's accumulated knowledge is somehow unfair appeared to be the standard perception, that a test was something that somebody gave you the answers to if you didn't know them so that you could get a passing grade. This is what our educational system has come to, ladies and gentlemen. We educators, whether we be certified teachers, paraprofessionals, administrators, cafeteria workers, school custodians, but all of us who are engaged in the education of your children have become babysitters who are to keep them entertained rather than people with knowledge to share with students who are motivated to actually learn it. The fact that an entire class was screaming, in effect, that they were being treated unfairly by being tested upon what they had supposedly learned over the last 2 weeks, astonished me. You would think that I would be used to this by now. I guess I am just stubborn, or just as unwilling to view reality as many of our friends in the progressive left. I hope that's not the case. I had hoped that having people to teach them, who explain to them that learning a foreign language means memorizing the vocabulary in that language, would have penetrated. But apparently it didn't. We have lately heard and seen documented fact that tells us our president watched American citizens die in a terrorist attack and did nothing to aid them, because doing so would have cost him political ground and denied the talking point that the terrorist organization behind that attack had been eradicated from the face of the earth. We have seen our president betray men who were offering their lives to protect our ambassador. We have seen the man who is supposed to be our leader throw Americans under the bus, literally under the bus, to be destroyed. My friend Ron in the chat room says this is treason, and he is exactly correct. Treason is giving aid and comfort to the enemies of one's nation. Not only did our president betray these men as individuals, he betrayed our country because he did not do the job or uphold the oath that he took when he was inaugurated. This is an example, ladies and gentlemen, of the progressive view, the Alinsky way, that is being taught to our children. Another example of the anything goes so long as you get the desired result. In that very Spanish class that I taught today, the other paraprofessional who takes the majority of the classes discovered that three of the members of the class turned in identical worksheets on an individual assignment, identical, with exactly the same answers, by the way, all of which were wrong, and didn't understand that this was not appropriate or honest. Today, I also was working to fill the job of a paraprofessional who was out in an eighth grade science class, and I saw one student hand another a homework assignment that he had completed so that the other student could crib the material on his. And when I called them on it, they were amazed that this was wrong. We are being told as educators that our job is not to give children our accumulated knowledge and set an example of integrity, but to keep them happy and make them have fun, and somehow or other that will automatically put knowledge in their minds. Teachers are being told, while they are being educated to enter the classroom, that they are going to be endowed, along with a teaching certificate, some sort of magic that will make them responsible for the learning of their students, in the sense that if the children don't study, don't turn in homework, don't pay attention in class, it is the teacher's fault. Because if they only taught right, everybody would be agog to absorb the pearls of wisdom that come from them is automatic that if the teacher does it right, everybody in the class, regardless of motivation, regardless of participation, regardless of intellect, will obviously learn everything all at the same time. I don't know how many of you watched Glenn Beck's program tonight. I hope that many of you did. Glenn had a conversation with the father of one of the Navy SEALs who was killed in Benghazi. A young man who voluntarily ran to help the beleaguered ambassador and the others in the quote-unquote safe house. Because that's what Americans do. That's what Navy SEALs do. That's exactly what this young man was. And in Mr. Beck's interview with Mr. Jim, Beck asked him to repeat what Secretary of State Hillary Clinton said to him as she stood over his son's coffin at Andrews Air Force Base. The Secretary's condolences to the father of this man consisted of, "I'm sorry for your loss, and we will make sure the maker of the video is arrested and jailed." Perpetuating the lie the administration has told for its own political advantage that a planned and executed terrorist attack, which they knew was just that, 5 minutes after it began, was somehow a spontaneous demonstration over a YouTube video put on the net in June that nobody saw. The absolute and utter gall of the representative of our government to the rest of the world, reiterating what has been shown to be a lie to the father of a man who lost his life doing the job that our president refused to do, makes me sick at my stomach. My friend Ron said that video was on TV in Egypt. Egypt isn't Libya. And there is absolutely no way that any spinmeister can possibly convince any American who has been paying attention to the emails and information coming out can believe that it possibly could have been the reason for the attack in Benghazi. My friend Ron also mentions it's possible it could have been an attempt to kidnap Stevens and exchange him for the blind sheikh and make Obama a hero. It is possible. It may very well have been. That's just further illustration of venality and the evil of a man who has been telling everybody on the campaign trail to trust him. The men in Benghazi who died trusted him. And we saw how that trust was paid. When we have an executive officer, which is what the president is, of our nation, who will do that to Americans in order to further his political career, how can we possibly want to see policies from someone like that continue to infect our kids? When he talks about everybody should go to college because everybody deserves to make a lot of money. That's a lie, too. When he talks about no child left behind, making sure that everyone will play on a level playing field, that is a lie. And you can say it's just a rosy view or it's just a utopian view, but it is a lie. Babysitters to keep our kids infantile is what the current administration wants in our public schools. Because if we educate our children, they will no longer be the dependent, happy, hands-out-gimme voters that this group of people need to maintain their power. If you want a babysitter for your children, you pay one and have them in your house and let them keep it all day. Don't send your children to my school to expect me to babysit them. I won't do it. And neither will 99% of the dedicated teachers I work with. I do my job, ladies and gentlemen, because I was taught that when I work for someone, I am renting myself to them. And as a fair dealing in a contract, I owe them the best I can do. And I owe them my expertise in whatever capacity it is needed, so long as it is not illegal for me to do what I'm asked. I do my job, not because I get rich, I don't. Not because my working conditions are easy and comfortable and relaxing. They aren't. Not because I believe that my function in life is to make children happy. It isn't. I do my job because I believe in my nation and the principles upon which it was founded, that an uneducated population cannot govern themselves. I do my job because I was born to teach and because I am an American. And my job to educate the future Americans who will govern this country, either by their vote or by their election to public office, in not only the academic knowledge they need, but the integrity, honesty, and personal responsibility they must demonstrate in order to rule themselves as individuals and our nation as a country. Looks like my friend Ron called in. Let me get him on the air for you. Hi there, Ron.
Ben Young.
Ron, can you hear me?
I can. How are you?
I'm doing great, honey. A little ticked off at the current events and what we're hearing about Libya and my lovely Spanish class this morning. I don't know whether you heard my précis of that because got here a little late. But other than that, I am my usual robust and passionate self. How about you?
I'm doing pretty good. I gathered that you were more than a little perturbed over our commander-in-chief.
Yes, I am.
And what I posted in there about the movie being played over in Egypt, I didn't want anyone to think that I was trying to justify in any way.
Oh, no, I didn't take it that way at all.
I posted a link in the chat room to a story I read the other day.
Mm-hmm.
And very interesting because it does give specifics, dates, times, and so on. And basically, the story goes that, you know, a guy got a phone call from a friend who's well-connected in Washington, D.C., et cetera, et cetera. So, of course, it's hearsay.
Mm-hmm.
But basically, the plan is that Obama working with the Egyptian president set a plan in motion to kidnap the ambassador in Benghazi, allowing Obama to do some kind of military action and rescue the ambassador. In exchange, he would send the blind sheikh back to Egypt for humanitarian reasons, making Obama a hero for rescuing our ambassador. And it's very interesting when you read through the story, some of the points. Number one, the people that were appointed as a security detail were the 17th Martyr Brigade, locals from Benghazi who were unarmed. And allegedly, allegedly the plan was that, you know, they knew what was supposed to happen somewhat. So there wouldn't be any firefight, no resistance. They would just let the guys in. They would kidnap the ambassador, which would also explain why we had a drone in the area surveilling it to make sure everything was going according to plan. The problem was that Mr. Stevens had with him a couple of former Navy SEALs, and they weren't part of the plan. And they fought back.
It wasn't just unarmed protesters. It was RPGs and a lot of other happy little ordnance.
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
So they set the place on fire, figuring they'd smoke them out, because they retreated into a safe room where they died from smoke inhalation. At that point, the plan's pretty well foiled, because now they have three dead bodies instead of
somebody to trade.
It is very plausible, I think.
Yes. It wouldn't surprise me. I tried from the very beginning of this administration, Ron, to be as objective as I could, because it's my nature to try to find positive if I can. I truly did try to look for some positive, and it has been eroding and eroding and eroding, and now I can no longer even attempt. I believe that this man is evil.
I think that's probably a pretty accurate description of him and many others in his little circle.
Yes, sir. And I wish that we would stop with the kumbaya crap and go back to Colonel Travis's line in the sand. The idea that sometimes you have to stand up and fight, because I'm sorry, all kumbaya in the world would not have made us buddies with Adolf Hitler, and it isn't going to make us palsy-wells with Ahmadinejad or the Muslim Brotherhood. These people hate us. They want us either dead or subjugated under the caliphate. It is obvious. It is clear. I've known this for years. And I have said since I was 16 years old and smart enough to notice that the most dangerous enemy anyone can have, either personally or nationally, is a religious fanatic, because there are absolutely no brakes on what they will do.
Well, I think that's true. But I also believe that their hatred, their fanaticism, is exactly what has made them a favorite tool of our government, because they're easily manipulated.
Yes.
It doesn't take much to get them whipped into a little frenzy.
Not at all.
And we have been running guns. Our government has been running weapons to these groups for decades.
They have. After all, Al-Qaeda and the Taliban were Mujahideen. And we supported them against the Soviet occupation of Afghanistan.
Well, see, we had good reason.
Of course we did. Politics and international relations always make very strict bedfellows. We have always understood that there are times when we go by the enemy of my enemy is my friend. And it is politically and our personal, our safety as a nation expedient to do so. Because an Afghanistan controlled by the Soviet Union, sitting on top of India, and Pakistan happily going after nukes, and India going after nukes, made for World War III possible eruption imminent. It made sense at the time. The unfortunate part of having to deal with people or groups whose understanding of political expediency ends with, don't you dare say anything bad about Muhammad, and we'll turn on you and kill you, because that's what the Imam told us we're supposed to do. There isn't the Islamic fundamentalists, Islamic terrorists, the Muslim Brotherhood, and the religion of Islam itself teach that one is supposed to lie to infidels. It's condoned and promoted by the teachings of Muhammad, because the end goal is the caliphate and the dominion of the earth under Allah and his prophet Muhammad's teachings, period. I don't care how much people talk about moderate Muslims, there aren't any.
Yeah, that's like a moderate progressive.
Yeah, exactly. There aren't any of those either. It's like, I'm a dog cat. No, you're not. You're either cat or dog. You're not both. You cannot, it's oxymoronic.
Well,
there
the thing,
is no buddy-buddy religious freedom under the teachings of Islam. You can't have it.
Sure.
It's not possible.
One of the things that bothers me, and, you know, I agree with a lot of what you're saying there, the political expediency.
Mm-hmm.
Part of that is an assumption, though, that actors within our government are acting in the interest of our quote-unquote national security.
Yeah.
And Rod Luke brings up a perfect point, and that is that if we assume that these actors are manipulating the Mujahideen freedom fighters and using these tactics in the interest of our national security, that flies in the face of the logic of leaving our borders wide open and sending funding to relocate many of these moderate Muslims to the United States within our borders.
Exactly. It doesn't make any sense. It's wheels with wheels. And you and I both know this.
Well,
and we also both know that the motivational force for a great many people in elected office has nothing whatsoever to do with furthering the interests of the nation. The motivation is furthering their own.
No matter
how much we try to vet candidates and how much concerned citizens like those of us in Patriot Family and a lot of the other conservative groups out there, we too can very easily see a surface representation that looks and sounds good. But until and unless we have the divine power to see into an individual's heart and soul, we can be tricked and fooled, and we have been. Some of us are easier to trick and fool than others, but we all can be. This is why our system was set up the way it was. Our founding fathers understood this. They were not stupid. They were incredibly brilliant men who did not assume a rosy view of all people are innately wonderful, and if we just give them enough, they'll all turn out to be really sweet, loving folks who embrace one another every 2.5 minutes.
No, well, we had already learned that lesson through the first Pilgrim settlement, when they almost starved to death in their little commune until they decided that, you know, weren't going to do that anymore, and they were all going to fend for themselves, and then things turned around.
Yep. Well, my husband was just saying, we tend to forget what Lincoln said, that you can fool some of the people all of the time, and all of the people some of the time, but you can't fool all of the people all of the time. And I think what we're seeing right now with what's coming out about Libya is going to be a perfect illustration of that.
Well, and I said it before, and I'll, you know, I think that this is your October surprise.
Yep.
The only issue is it's an October surprise in reverse, meaning that one guy thought it was going to work out in his favor, and it should end up putting people in prison.
Yes, it should.
I mean, honest to goodness, it absolutely should. But
yes, sir. I agree.
I hate to sound conspiratorial, but I can't help but try to apply Occam's razor to the situation. And when you look at the facts as we know them, it certainly seems like if you wanted to create a perfect storm, a confrontation, a holy war between the two largest religious-based groups on the planet, Christians and Muslims,
right.
We're certainly going about it the right way.
Yes, they are. And I don't know whether, because I am not divine, I cannot see into the heart and soul of anybody. A lot of times my own is murky. But I cannot see that our current administration is particularly interested in advancing the Christian side of that particular conflict. Because I am knowledgeable enough, given my academic background and given my own personal investigations, to know that the making nice with people who believe God tells them that it's their job to hate us is only going to reinforce that opinion that they hold. We are showing them exactly what they expect to see. We are showing them a weak, vacillating, sheep-like group of people who are ripe for conquest for their own good.
Well, I wouldn't disagree with that assessment at all. And at the same time, you have a large contingent of the Christian population that, believes, of course, that we should be meek and that government is in control and government was divinely inspired by God and we should obey government regardless of what they say.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I think back to something that Saddam Hussein said that when I heard it, I had the same reaction when he uttered the words that I had when William Jefferson Clinton uttered the words, it depends on what is.
Yeah.
And that was when we went into Iraq the second time around, and Hussein said that we had started the mother of all wars, a holy war.
Mm-hmm.
I think he knew more about it than I certainly gave him credit for at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And it just looks to me like the stage is almost perfectly set for a confrontation between the two major religions and for a civil war confrontation within this country.
I, as much as I dislike the idea, I'm realist enough to agree with you. We have been basically headed toward this for a very, very long time. About 1,000 years, actually. Because what most people in this nation can't or will not understand is that the form of Islam that is taught and practiced and preached and intricately entwined with government in the Middle East has absolutely nothing to do with the idea of what we accept as logical tolerance for individual choice in spiritual path. Americans grow up with the mindset that this is just natural and everybody should obviously see it, that each and every one of us is an individual, that we seek and find the divine in our own way, and that's a good thing because we are constantly being told this both directly and subliminally, in everything we do. We are taught from birth, literally, in this society, that your connection with God is your own damn business. Pardon my profanity. But we do not understand the society that teaches you are the plaything of Allah. Your greatest goal is to submit in complete obedience to the will of Allah as promulgated through the Quran and the teachings of the Imams. This is totally foreign to the way we grow up.
Mine is not to question why. Mine is to do or die.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Americans have never held that philosophy. Even before we were Americans, we didn't. This nation was founded by people who were dissatisfied with the status quo and got the hell out and went somewhere where they could make their own way. That's part of our national character. It's part of our, if you will, genetic inheritance. Our ancestors came here because they didn't believe that. If they had believed that, they'd have stayed where they were.
We would not be a nation. I read a great article the other day, and I had never really stopped to think of it in that light, I guess, you know, directly or cognitively. But the writer was talking about the Revolutionary War and our resultant Constitution. And he said that, you know, it wasn't because the people were adamantly opposed to a 2% tax or a lot of the other ideas. It wasn't that they were so ideologically against England or Britain that, you know, they were just going to rise up and show that monarchy what they had coming. It was more that they had established self-sufficiency without the intervention of their government. They had become self-sufficient, and they liked it.
They liked it
that way. They didn't need the king's money. They didn't need the king's intervention. They didn't need his assistance in any way. And suddenly the crown begins to try and exert its influence and control again. Mm-hmm. And they said, no, the hell with this.
Yeah.
We're not going to have that.
No, we'll go where we damn please. And part of the reason for the Revolutionary War, which gets glossed over in modern revisionist history, is one of the biggest quarrels they had with England was their artificially declaring that nobody could travel any further west.
Gee, and here we are with passports today, where we can't come and go as we please.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. That was one of the biggest and most commonly held beliefs that convinced a lot of people who actually wanted the protection of the crown because they were worried about Spain and they were worried about France, but they didn't want them protecting them out of all they owned, to quote the King of Siam in the musical. It was, why shouldn't we dispute with the Indians who are not using the land the way we would? That doesn't make us right to choose our way over the Indian way, or the Indians' right to choose their way over ours. It meant that we wanted what they had to use to our benefit, and we were willing to go and kill them and take it.
Yeah.
And that was a prime motivation, because many of the people in the already settled parts of the colonies along the seacoast, the Tidewater area of Virginia, Boston, the port cities, New York, port city, they needed the trade. Their jobs depended on international, if you will, trade. But the folks settling that new land had that self-sufficiency. There was abundance out there. They could do pretty much anything they pleased because they could grow their own food, they could find their own water, they could keep going to the horizon. They were not happy where they were. The only thing standing in the way were a bunch of people who had a culture that was not as mechanized and not as technologically advanced. And they saw no reason why they should all of a sudden turn backwards and sit down where they were and be uncomfortable simply because there was something to dispute with all that land that they wanted. It was that aggression, that a desire to go farther, to have more, that is part of the human nature. That's what we are. And all of the progressive laws and all of the anti-bullying kumbaya, let's all give each other a hug and there won't be any bullies, is not going to change that. We have learned over the centuries to try to modify it enough so that we at least try to negotiate our advantage instead of just go in and bash everybody. But sometimes we have to, because in this particular instance, with what we are facing, we are looking at our literal extinction as culture.
But Terry,
and we have a culture.
But Terry, if we were to turn on the Muslims, that would be genocide.
Oh, I know. I know. But it's okay for them to basically turn on us and commit genocide because Allah tells them to.
Well, that's different.
Of course it is. Of course it is. You know, tolerance only works if both sides practice it.
Yeah. Unfortunately, the liberal progressives haven't figured that out, or they have figured that out, and they use it to
but
their advantage.
But they don't care, and they don't care. It's a lot easier to manipulate emotionally than it is to convince someone logically, rationally, and intellectually. Democrats have traditionally operated emotionally. Progressives are well known for it. The whole point of 99% of their idiotic arguments is the feel good, we can make heaven on earth if you just give up your freedom, we'll make it risk-free and safe, and you'll never have to worry again. Of course, yep. You won't be able to do what you want to do unless we tell you you can, but you won't have to worry because you will understand the freedom of total obedience. And damn it, this is what Islam teaches.
Well, see, and that's the twisting of Marx's philosophy, and that's what Marx really struggled with. If you read Marx, he couldn't see clear a way to get to utopia where everybody was equal and even, and there was no government without first creating a totalitarian system.
Exactly. You cannot have utopia if you have people in it.
Right. Yep, we're the wrench in the works.
That's right. Because no matter how hard you try, education and indoctrination, you're not going to turn us into machine parts. There's always going to be somebody who will go the other way. And this attitude, this belief, this progressive mindset is what, to bring it back to, you know, the purpose of the show, is what I have been fighting in education for over 40 years. The idea that somehow or other, if we just indoctrinate everybody to believe that government is the fount of all wisdom and that the goal of your life is to be comfortable and safe and that government can guarantee this, this is what we are teaching our kids. The fact that in the class where I caught the kid handing his homework over so somebody else could copy it, the special education students in that collaborative class got the answers to all the questions on the worksheets as soon as everybody finished doing them so that they could go ahead and rewrite theirs with the correct answers.
It's insanity.
Tell me about it, honey. I deal with it every day. And bless my husband. He lets me come home and vent. But it's a wonder that I'm not crazier than I am, Ron. It really is. And I'm fairly crazy to begin with. You have to be to do what I do continually. But I always know deep down that there'll be at least one in every classroom, at least one, who will somehow or other hear something I've said or taught. And that one may and probably will someday down the road when I'm dead and gone, use it to make something better. And that's why I keep doing it.
Yeah.
Teachers cannot guarantee that everyone will learn any more than you can guarantee that every seed you plant will grow into a 20-foot tall tree if you just tell it to. But what we're doing now is we are creating a citizenry who look to government to level the playing field, to make them safe, to tell them that they're loved and liked. And everybody will bend over backwards to accommodate their needs because that's what we're doing for them. We are giving them something that we call an education that is as far from real education as the moon is from my door.
Well, we are fortunate here in Georgia that this year we have a ballot initiative for charter schools. And the way that it's structured, the charter schools would be local public schools where the student, or where the students, where the teachers and the parents determine mm-hmm. what the proper curriculum is to be. It will not be determined. It will not be determined by the state or by the federal government or by any standards yep. other than those that are put forth by the parents and the teachers mm-hmm. collaboratively.
Yes, and that's the way it should be. Plus, we have got to stop pandering to this mm-hmm. idiotic idea that somehow or other every child can learn something within a given period of time and achieve an objective standard based on chronology and still individually go at their own pace and accommodate to their own strengths and weaknesses. This is the most idiotic educational plan ever conceived by human beings. It is not even remotely possible to do.
Well,
and
done,
yet this,
done correctly, you can teach calculus to a turnip. It's plausible.
Of course. If you're a good enough teacher, that turnip is going to get an A in calculus and go on to be a nuclear physicist.
Yep.
According to the way that our teachers are now being trained, yes. I was working with a general education teacher today, and we were talking as the class was working on something, and she was saying she got into a lot of trouble. She's fairly fresh out of college. This is her first full-time teaching position. She got into a lot of trouble with her professors because she would argue with the idea that all kids are teachable and all teachers are responsible for their outcome, for the outcome of the students. And she argued, and that got her in trouble with her professors in college. And I understood, and I told her, honey, you and I are friends, because it's nonsense. And yet this babysitter mentality, that what we're supposed to do is to make them feel good about themselves and happy to follow whoever promises them something they want, this is not, in my estimation, the function of an educator. It's not what I do when I teach.
Well, you know, my store manager and I were discussing it this evening. We have people within our company
mm-hmm.
that are college educated in business and economics
mm-hmm.
that don't understand how to calculate a 10% gross margin.
Mm-hmm. Surprise me.
They're still using the times function on the calculator.
Believe me, no. I had three boys in my ISS room on Tuesday, and they also dumped in two girls to be supposedly tutored in Spanish at the same time, which was a real fun deal, trust me. Anyhow, these three boys were working on simple linear equations, right? In a way, yeah, 2x plus y equals 12 or whatever, okay? Every doggone one of them pulled out a calculator when I asked him what 5 minus 2 was. Uh-huh.
Incredible.
I know. It would, if parents and grandparents and aunts and uncles and cousins, adults who are over the age of 30, actually walked into a classroom as an invisible presence and saw these kids, they would be appalled. And there are a lot of them out there who are over 30 and even more under 30, who when a teacher calls them at benchmark, you know, midway to the 9 weeks and says, your kid has passed because they don't do their homework and they don't study for tests, the parent responds, well, if you teach them right, they'd have an A. It's absolutely the propaganda that has been fed to parents that their children can walk into a classroom and sit there for 55 minutes, do absolutely nothing, not even listen, and somehow they will walk out knowing something. The Spanish class that I taught today, They still haven't figured out that when you are learning a foreign language, you have to memorize the words.
Mm.
I'm not kidding you. They were doing this quiz on something that they had been studying and going over for the last 2 weeks. And they were absolutely whining and almost in tears when I told them, no, you can't use the Spanish dictionary or your textbook.
Well, they're they're probably doing well just to understand English.
Yeah, and even there they're lacking because they don't. How do you explain to someone the concept that you have an infinitive and then you have to change it to match a pronoun when they don't even know what an infinitive is in English? And they don't. Try to explain to a kid who doesn't know an infinitive is a two plus verb, like run, walk, swim. In Spanish, infinitive is one word. And in order to change the master pronoun, you got to drop off the last letters and put on different endings. They still haven't got that. We've been going over it for 2 weeks. It's frustrating as all get out. Because it's not that they're stupid, Ron. It's not that they're capable of learning. They aren't. The kids that are allowed to take this course scored above average on their standard learning in English. That's how they get a chance to take it. But what they're being tested on is crap. Their scores mean nothing. The idea that they don't understand what tests are for floors me. They have no clue that we give them tests not to give them a good grade, but to determine how much they have learned. And that doesn't mean, here's the answer, now I'll get a good grade on the test. They don't understand this because they have been spoon-fed and babysat for 7 years when they get into eighth grade. And all of a sudden, they're taking a course that is going to be for credit toward high school graduation. And they have no clue that in order to pass it, they're going to have to remember that amarillo means yellow.
Hmm.
And, you know, poor David, bless his heart. I come home and I vent, and I'm venting to you all out there. And I'm not doing it only for my own emotional satisfaction, although that is a factor. It helps. I'm doing it because you need to know that this is what is going on. These kids are going to go out there and they're going to enter the workforce. And they're going to be the ones you're going to have to train. You are going to be up the proverbial creek without the proverbial paddle because they are not going to have any clue that when you tell them how to do their job, they're supposed to remember it. Looks like my friend Liz is on the line. Hang on. I'll see what she's got to say tonight. Don't go away, Ron.
Oh, I'm not. I'm right here.
Good. Hi, Linda.
Hi. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, Sugar. How about you?
Oh, my gosh. Busy like crazy, as usual. I just got back from about an hour and 20 minutes of phone banking for the state assembly here. You know, the last 12 days before the slaves go to vote. So... Here we are.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm sorry you couldn't be here for the first part of the show, but I'm really glad you're here now. We've run the gamut from the incredible, evil, treasonous creature we have in the White House, Libby, to the climate that leads us to elect something like that, which is promoted in our public schools. Anybody stupid enough to follow someone who has demonstrably lied over and over and over again, not only with a straight face, but with repeating, you can trust me on every train stop for last week. And as I said earlier, the men who died in Benghazi trusted them, what they got. And you think you're going to do anything better?
Well, you know, this is what I'm finding out when I'm listening to the other side. Unfortunately, I get bombarded with it, not only in the internet, but wherever I go. These people are so brain dead, too. Whenever they're asked a question about anything in political realm or about Obama or any of this stuff or the Republicans. What they're doing is they're just parroting and mimicking and regurgitating the same diatribe and diarrhea
yep.
that has been fed
yep.
to them on PMS-LSD. That's exactly what they're doing. I mean,
mm-hmm.
there's no getting around it. Every single time they just listen to mm-hmm. those stupid news stations and they just parrot it right back to you. They have no original thought at all. None.
And they have been trained to do that in our public schools, Linda. When you see kids copying directly from a textbook into a prepared sentence,
mm-hmm.
when I was in school, that was called plagiarism.
Yeah, big time.
When
oh,
you
my
see
dad
them
was...
when you see them totally baffled, when they're called out for cheating, when they hand out, they hand their homework to somebody else to copy it right in front of you, and they're
oh
surprised
God.
When you tell them it's wrong. That has happened twice in the last week and a half.
Good grief. How do you stand it? Oy. Boy, you're
it's
a saint.
Tough. No, darling, I'm actually more devilish than saintly because I don't give them any slack. The poor Spanish class today got told in no uncertain terms that if they couldn't memorize the vocabulary, they were not going to pass this course. And no, I wasn't going to tell them the answers to their quiz. And no, they couldn't use the dictionary. It's
wow.
amazing. Yeah. Is it any wonder we've got what we've got in the administration when the biggest chunk of the population that voted for that is the product of this over the last 30 years?
Well, we've been voting for horrible people for a long time, as
mm-hmm.
we now know.
Mm-hmm.
And those of us who have our heads screwed on somewhat straight have seen the light, and we're not going to be doing that anymore or anytime soon. We're hoping to get a third party if we even have a country in the next 2 weeks. It's pretty
yeah.
disgusting what's going on. Yeah, I mean, I know Ron is one of those guys, and he always says it's slaves vote, and he is correct. I mean,
mm-hmm.
we're so far down the rabbit hole, it's pretty pathetic. But I'm still fighting. I'm still standing.
Yeah.
So,
as much as I admire Thomas Jefferson, I hope and pray that his vision that we would have a violent overthrow of our government every 20 years doesn't come to pass, and it hasn't so far, but we're getting awfully close.
Oh, yeah.
One of our strengths as a nation, one of the things that we have done that no other nation in the history of the world has done, we have had an orderly transfer of power for over 200 years.
I know.
And that's not happened in any other nation that I know of in history.
I just feel you're like you say, we're perilously close to the, you know.
We are. Simply because we have allowed ourselves to become too comfortable. We've allowed ourselves
yep.
to believe in evil, and we allow public education through the means of our government to teach children that there really is an easy button and they're entitled to it.
It's awful,
have,
I know.
Yes, it's
we have more than one, just, yeah, we have more than one or two generations who feel that way. I'm
yes,
surrounded in California by them.
Believe
surrounded.
Me, I know. I have been in the business of education ever since 1975. Okay? That's a long time ago. When I tell the kids that I was born in 1946, they ask me if I was there when Lincoln was shot. I mean, their concept of elapsed time is a little shaky. But to them, my childhood is as distant as Lincoln's
right.
to me.
It's
because,
not good, I know.
No, it isn't. And when I was in eighth grade, well, for example, today, one of the classes that I was in, substituting for a missing, an out paraprofessional, was in a collaborative English class where there were a gen ed teacher, a sped teacher, and me. The class was
mm-hmm.
reading Poe's Telltale Heart. And as they were doing that, they were reading it from a paperback that was a collection of short stories.
Okay.
Among them were Steinbeck's The Pearl, Cask of Amontillado and The Telltale Heart, Guy de Maupassant's The Necklace, Bradbury, a story by Bradbury, several others, one by
mm-hmm.
Saki, that I read I read Telltale Heart and Cask of Amontillado when I was in sixth grade. By eighth grade, we were reading De Maupassant. We were reading Murders in the Rue Morgue. We were reading Sir Walter Scott. We were reading Dickens, etc. If you sat an eighth grade down, Charles Dickens, they would need to have a dictionary at their elbow.
Yes.
Even back in the ancient times when I was in high school and we were reading Dickens, I was known as the class dictionary. Now, that I don't take any pride in that because it's not something I try to do. Words stay with me. They always have. But the idea that you had high school seniors who couldn't understand Dickens, okay, even then. Now, it was only maybe 10% of the class. Now it's 80% of the class who can't possibly even attempt Shakespeare.
No, they couldn't.
And they study it, but you know what they do? They movie.
Oh, yeah, of course. I'm surprised half of them can understand Dick and Jane.
Today, for example.
B-spot run.
I know. They were reading Telltale Heart, right? Okay. And I know you know the story because you're a well-educated woman. And it's very short. It's only about, five pages maximum. And then after they finished it, they had a shortened, condensed version in a video so they could understand the story.
Oh, my God.
Because everybody in the teaching staff in there knew that if you left them with just having read it, none of them would be able to tell you that the guy telling the story is crazy as a loon. And, you know, one of the questions they had to answer about the story is, who was the narrator? And they were all baffled because there aren't any names.
Oh, my God.
Couldn't figure out the narrator is the murderer. Because his name wasn't there.
Yep.
Ron. They wouldn't know his name either, honey. Trust me.
What did he type in there?
He put in, just tell him it was written by John McCain or Joe Biden. Joe Biden, they may or may not recognize, but McCain, not eighth graders. They were only 08, you know, or 9 when the McCain ran against Obama. So, you know, it's not important anymore. But, you know, and then they should have been in the civics class that I was in seventh mod. Again, collaborative, of course, with a SPED teacher and a gen ed teacher and me. And the teacher was explaining that the electoral votes are based on the representation in both houses of Congress for each state. And he went on to explain that every state has two senators. So then he asked, so how many senators are there? Nobody knew.
You mean in total?
That's right. We had to ask them, how many states are there? 50. And if each one has two, they all whipped out their calculators. There are 100 of them.
Oh, my God.
I know. I am not kidding you.
Oh, my God.
I am not kidding you. I am not misrepresenting the facts. I'm not Obama. I'm not lying. I'm telling you the flat-out, blatant, freaking truth.
Oh, Lord. You poor thing.
And these people in 5 more years will vote.
That is scary. Oh, that is so scary. Well, that's what they mission accomplished. I mean, that's what they want. They want dumbed-down Americans so they can control the heck out of us and give us their tyrannical rule.
Ron was asking, what about D.C.? D.C. does not have a senator. They get 3 electoral votes, but they don't have representation in either the House or the Senate as yet.
Wow.
They're allowed to vote in the presidential election, and they have 3 electoral votes. They do not have representation in either the Senate or the House. They want it, but they don't have that. Been pushing for it for 35, 40 years now. But you know, the idea that they have to pull out a calculator to figure out that every one of 50 states, two senators, there are actually 100 of them in the Senate.
It is frightening. I can't. Can't even add 50 and 50. Oh my Lord!
I know they can't. You know, I deal with this all the time, and the only reason that I keep doing it and that I'm not in our local mental hospital in one of those pretty white coats with the funny sleeves is because sooner or later, in every single class, as I said earlier, there's going to be at least one who will something I say or something I teach down the line is going to mean something. It's that hope, and I'm very, very fortunate because I know that that happens. I was lucky enough to have somebody come back to me when he was in his late 20s, and I had had him when he was in middle school, and say to me, I remember what you taught me, and I wish I'd listened. I'd have avoided a lot of mistakes. So I know they remember.
That, they do.
That incident, that experience is what's kept me doing what I do in spite of wanting to bite everybody within 20 feet when I come home.
I'm surprised you don't want to bite them when you're in the classroom.
Oh, honey, I do. I do. Today, I swear, I literally put my hand to my forehead, turned around, and sat down when I told them they were going to have a quiz, and they all practically burst into tears that they couldn't use their dictionary or their textbook to answer the questions.
Good grief. That is so... I can't believe it. That,
no.
You know, at such young ages, they have the onset of Alzheimer's, and they can't remember. That's sad.
And no understanding that if you're studying a foreign language, you're supposed to remember it.
I know.
They don't
It's just like the multiplication or the addition, and you know, and you can use all the math tricks and everything else. My God, I mean, how many years we went without calculators, you know?
Oh, yes. You know,
For a short period of time, this is going back to the ancient days of the early 70s, and I was a bank teller. You know what we had? We had our brain, and we had the old crank adding machines. Absolutely.
Machine. I know. When I was working for my husband's mother, she used and I used an adding machine. We didn't even have computers, and I started working for her in 75. She never put computers in. And I left that business in 1997.
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, everywhere I've worked, if I've had to run a cash register or anything like that, we've always balanced to the penny without a calculator, just because I've learned a long time ago how to count backwards correctly when you're either making change or you're dealing as a seller or whatever. It's you get into that habit of doing, and it's like ingrained in you.
Yeah.
You know, and of course repetition helps you retain it, as you know.
But they don't.
Bad.
They don't
do
any memorization drill anymore. If you remember when you and I were in school, because we are saber-toothed tigers and Neanderthal man and all that stuff, but remember that part of every week's process was we had to recite something. We memorized a poem, or we memorized a preamble to the Constitution, or we memorized a line for a
figure,
or part of a sonnet, or times tables, or something.
Spelling.
Because, spelling was memorization. We had spelling bees. But, you can't do that because they might not get it right, and then their self-esteem will be wounded.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
It's like the same ideology that's being pushed on in the national stage on anything you want to talk about, and when you talk about the self-esteem or whatever, and you know, success is punished. You know, the
baby
easy
sitter
button is pushed. Oh, it's just insanity.
Yeah. We are all infants being babysat by government, and our children are intended to remain infants babysat by educators. One girl in the Spanish class last week when I was covering that looked at me and in all seriousness said, well, I really have a very bad memory, so I'm having a lot of trouble. I said, why are you taking this class?
Oh, my gosh.
Why do you think you're going to be able to pass a class in Spanish when you don't remember anything? Honestly, she sat there and told me, I have a really bad memory and I don't remember things. So I'm having trouble. What should I do? Drop the damn class.
Yeah, it's a shame.
I'm sorry.
Yeah,
what
you're dealing with is these kids have been conditioned or brainwashed or taught that effort is not anything viable. I don't know how you make it through the day.
Well, some days I'm hanging on by my fingernails. I really am.
It's pretty sad.
It's scary because I am really, really concerned for my grandchildren and for their children.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to outlive my country, and I'm scared I'm going to.
Yeah. Oh, God. Oh,
I really, really
I think we're all on that. Yeah, we all are.
That I am going to outlive my nation because I see my one hope is that in spite of all the dumbing down, in spite of all the proponents of stupidity and sheep-like obedience, there are always going to be people who can think and actually enjoy doing it.
Right, and other things too. I think that part of our DNA is the pioneer spirit and the the willingness to stand up for our rights and go forth, and really be true patriots if we can, as long as they don't come mow us down, in the meantime.
Mm-hmm. Well, so, one of the reasons that I am eternally grateful that I was born in this nation is because it's really the only one that from the beginning has recognized the triumphant quality of the human spirit. Not imperfection, but the human spirit. The idea that our desire to do and learn and create cannot be permanently stifled.
Right.
That
well, they're doing their damnedest. Yeah, they're doing their darndest. Oh, my God.
They are. Yeah. I know it's a family show, but believe me, they've heard worse. Especially if they've been anywhere near a middle school. And if you want language that would literally make a Barcelona call girl blush, go to a middle school in a place where the teacher isn't and listen. I did that, too. I worked in a donut shop across from a middle school. And
oh, Lord.
The kids would come in the morning, and I swear, the first week or so, I spent a lot of time with my mouth open thinking, these are children? These are not, sailors in, a brothel? But, I got used to it.
Thanks for taking my call, and I'm going to let you finish this up, and I'm going to try to catch some of it. I've been a busy little girl over here in California trying to fight it.
Good girl. And as I have said before, and I mean with all my heart, you are one of my heroes, honey. Because
you
are out there
too.
Putting the boots on the ground and doing a lot of the things that I just don't have the energy or the physical capacity to do. And
well,
I
you're
am
doing your
so
part
proud.
In the school, so that's amazing. You just keep
Thank
up the
you.
Good fight, Terry. God bless.
Same to you, sweetheart. Ladies and gentlemen, we only have about 10 minutes left of maybe 11 of tonight's show. I want to let you all know that in spite of the fact that I get frustrated and that, bless your heart, you listen to me rant, I don't give up. I can see the ills in our current system, but I'm not throwing up my hands and saying, oh, well, let's just get it and all go down the road and be as comfortable as possible. I keep doing what I do because I believe in the founding principles of this nation, and as I said a moment ago, I believe in the human spirit. I believe that no matter how much and how hard progressives and their ilk fight to kill it, they cannot. That human spirit will triumph. Because we truly are a little higher than the beasts and a little lower than the angels. We are not perfect and we never can be. But we can and do learn from our mistakes. And one of the biggest progressive lies is that no one should be allowed to make a mistake. If we do not make mistakes, we do not learn. If my students in the Spanish class are getting all the answers on that quiz, they have learned nothing. If they get it back with a big fat 20 on it, maybe they will learn that if you want to know a language, you have to remember the words. So if nothing else, even if they don't pass Spanish, maybe they will have figured out that if you want something, you actually have to put forth effort to get it. And that if you don't put forth effort, you won't ever get it. So if you want it, guess what? You're going to have to try harder. If even one or two of them learn that, I will have partially justified my existence. I cannot magically impart knowledge. I cannot take a hypodermic syringe, stick it in my ear, pull out what I know, and poke a kid in the head with it, and inject him with what I have learned. I cannot do that. I have no magic wand. I cannot use the Cruciatus curse or Obliviate or Imperious to make them learn. What I can do and what I continue to do is to offer them what I have learned and try to be for them the best role model that I can by not telling them comforting lies, by not giving them something, instead of helping them achieve, and by living my life with those same guidelines. I try very, very hard to live the golden rule. I don't always succeed. I don't know of anyone short of divine who always does. But I do believe in work effort. Any student that I have anything to do with is trying to learn. I will turn somersaults and probably break my hip if that will help them get it. But I will not pander, and I will not lie, and I will not give answers to anyone on a test or quiz. And strangely enough, 90% of the kids that I have in my little jail, and the kids in the classes where I substitute, where I'm the wicked witch, tell me that I'm best teacher they've ever had. That is both very, very gratifying and very, very sad. Because every teacher should be the best you've ever had. Every educator should want their students to supersede them in knowledge, ability, and desire to learn. Teaching is not just a job, ladies and gentlemen. It is a vocation in the same sense that entering a monastery, or convent, or the ministry is. It is an incredibly powerful position. A teacher can mold a life so that what they have taught lives on long after they are gone. And anyone who enters the profession without realizing that needs to leave it as soon as possible. And it isn't making people feel good. And it isn't making them have fun. And it isn't giving them a grade so they can pass a course and get a credit. It's giving them knowledge and the desire to seek knowledge. That is what makes a teacher. That is what I was taught by the best of the men and women in whose classrooms I spent my time, and is what I want to teach the students with whom I interact. I am not omniscient. I do not and cannot know everything. But I can be honest, and I can tell a student, I don't know, but let's find out. And I can tell the student the truth. All I have to give, ladies and gentlemen, is what I have learned and what I have experienced. In the end, that is all any of us has to give to the generations that will succeed us. Material inheritance is no guarantee that happiness will arise. The number of people who have inherited wealth and blown it all in the first 5 years of the majority is legion. Giving to the future is giving of yourself. That's what teachers, good teachers, do. I have the good fortune to work with many of those good teachers, all of whom are as frustrated as I am, because they are being asked to not teach. They are being told that they must babysit and comfort and nurse perpetual infants. And yet they keep trying. Even bound and foot as they are by our current system, they don't give up. They keep teaching. And I would like you all, if you know a good teacher, please tell them that you honor their effort. We all like to feel that we are recognized for what we do. And we want that recognition to be honestly earned. Teachers don't run into a firefight and give up their lives to protect someone, as a general rule. But they do give their time and their heart and their knowledge and their experience to the future citizens of this country. And they keep doing it. In spite of obstacles, in spite of ridiculous policies that can't and won't work, and in spite of vilification that they have not earned. There are more good ones out there, ladies and gentlemen, than the media would have you believe. I'd like to invite everybody back next Thursday, provided we don't have a hurricane in Virginia, which is where I am. We'll be here for Patriot Education next Thursday at 7 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. Well, actually, yeah, Eastern Daylight. It'll still be Daylight Savings next week. And we'd also like to invite you to join us every night of the week for one of our radio shows here on Blog Talk Radio. Every Monday, Constitution Hour with Ron Golden. Every Tuesday, Patriot Family. Wednesdays, Right from the Left Coast with that beautiful bird of paradise from California, Miss Linda Sills. Patriot Education every Thursday, Foreclosure Help on Fridays, and Breaking the Illusion on Saturday, and Frank is Fed Up on Sunday. There's something for everyone here on Blog Talk through Patriot Families. Visit us through the internet airwaves. Come and visit us in our chat room on the Patriot Families site. Read our blogs, add your own. Most of all, talk with your friends, your family, and your neighbors about what is true, what is real, and what is honest. And on November 6th, get out there and vote your beliefs. Whoever it is you vote for, vote with honesty and integrity. God bless you all, and we'll see you next week. Have a wonderful evening, gentlemen, and God bless America.